Hey builders, this is Rob. Just checking in with you real quick before we start the show. I want to let you know about an upcoming event here on December 6th and 7th. That is the Extra Life event put on by our friends Mark and Brian at Grand Con. That is going to be at Out of the Box, a wonderful game store in Zeeland, Michigan, December 6th and 7th. From 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's 24 hours of gaming to raise money for Extra Life, which is a wonderful charity. If you guys are in the Southwest Michigan area and you want to go hang out with some good people and help some good people and play some awesome games, then take a look at that. You can find out some more at grand-con.com. And it's a good cause, good people. Go and check it out. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, December 2nd, 2013, and you're listening to episode 79. 79 long, exciting, sexy episodes. My name is Rob, with my sexy voice still, my sexy, sick voice. Sitting across from me is the decidedly unsexy Jason.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
I was thinking it'd be sweet sometime if you did the intro with an auto-tuner.
I don't know how to do that.
Me either, but
if I get me that software and I will learn it so that I can auto-tune the intro, I would love that. It'd be fun.
So fun.
Yeah. Somebody out there, listeners, tell me how I can get some free auto-tuning software. I have Acid.
I can tell you who could tell you how.
Yeah.
Chris from Flip the Table, right. I guarantee he knows how to do it because he knows everything about all that stuff.
So Chris, if you're listening or if anybody else out there can tell me how to auto-tune using Acid, I will auto-tune an intro.
Nice. Keep you guys guessing, you know.
Right. So, how's it going, sir?
It is going very, very well.
Yeah? Yes. Good. What's new with you?
Not a whole lot. I took a trip recently. On said trip, picked up a new game. I haven't got to play it yet.
Okay.
A new game that is decidedly a very old game. We talked about it on Something from Nothing recently, which is Mancala. You heard of
Mancala? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I've heard of that. It's an ancient game.
Yeah, they found things from it from a long time ago. So I just bought a cheap version of it. Yeah. Chevy Dodd was talking about how he has one that's carved from Africa, which just sounds pretty awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. So, but I just have a cheap version that folds in half. And it's made out of wood, but you wouldn't know it because it kind of feels like plastic wood.
Made of cheap wood.
Yeah, very cheap wood.
Yeah.
So, but that's okay because it looks like a cool game. A couple of the guys we were talking to on the show, Alex Kevern and David Short, were both working on prototypes that had that kind of as a mechanic, like the Mancala thing.
So that's the game with, there's a long board with like wells that you put stones into.
And I think you're trying to move them down the line or something.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how it works, but it was interesting enough to me when they described it. I was like, I want to try this game. And I always like those old school games where you can use mechanics from.
Yeah.
That are, just kind of these universal mechanics that are untouched, So I think it's just good as a designer, trying those things will help spark some ideas maybe.
Yeah.
So,
that's good.
It's good times though.
Good.
Also on that trip, unless there's something you want to talk about.
Well, no, go ahead.
I was just talking about what I've been playing.
Yeah.
It's had a cool experience. On the trip, before we went up to the hotel we were going to, we stopped at my parents to see my parents and stuff, and we're hanging out there. And, I brought Love Letter with me. I never talked about that before, but I was looking for a game that Steph and I could play if it was just us at the hotel, or something that I thought that we could play with my mom too. Mm-hmm. And because she likes games, but she plays themeless games for the most part, right?
Yeah.
She plays all sorts of different card games and stuff, but they're all Hoyle card style games,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So I thought, this is one I think she can get. I think this is one where, because the theme's not really going to matter to her.
Right.
But the mechanics are simple enough, and the gameplay is fun enough that I think, you know, and she loved it. And, you know, Steph had played it before, but had a great time with it, too. And it just got me thinking kind of about, you know, those people that love playing games, but, you know, like, I mean, I guarantee that if I asked my mom what the theme was about now, even though it was called Love Letter, she could not tell me.
Yeah.
Because she didn't care.
Yeah.
You know?
The card with the game with the people that do the things, right?
Right.
Something
right.
like that.
And she actually almost won. So it was just kind of interesting, you know, I mean, like when we played Water Balloon Washout with her, when I was playtesting, she got it, right? Because I mean, it's like, it's about water balloons, you know, and this is like, okay, so you've got this love letter, you're trying to get it to the princess or prince or whatever. And, you know, she's like, oh, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
What does this guy do? I'm going to play the guy that's worth 7 points. Yeah, that's this guy. Or I'm going to play the 5 point guy. Yeah, that's the wizard, mom. Oh, okay. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of a cool experience playing a game like that with somebody who doesn't quite get the theme aspect of games, you know?
Yeah. She's just in it for the mechanics.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. My mom is mechanics before theme.
Yeah,
for sure.
Clearly. Clearly.
She's in that camp. So, and I'm in the opposite camp. So, you know, man, yikes. Sometimes it's tough to even talk.
Right.
So.
Parents, you know, they're hard.
Have you been playing anything fun?
I have. Yeah. My cousin who likes to play games was visiting this past weekend, and we played some Love Letter. He and his girlfriend had never played that, and that was great, and they enjoyed that. They were gracious enough to play Rumpelbum with me, and that was fun.
I think you're going for like a, how many times can Jason put Rumpelbum in the show notes as what Rob is
Well, it's for sale. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, what?
But,
I had no idea.
Our listeners can pick up their own copy at the Game Crafter. It's thegamecrafter.com. It's only $10.99. It's real cheap. Real cheap. Anyway, and then we played Munchkin.
Munchkin!
I couldn't remember, but I'm pretty sure. Like, I thought at first that I had played Munchkin a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
But after playing Munchkin, I think I played Flux last time. I think it was Flux that I played.
I have to be honest, when you said, when I went to play, I was thinking, I thought you were going to say, I thought I remembered that I hated Munchkin, and then I played it, and I was like, yep, just because I don't, did you like it?
Well, I have feelings about it.
I'm just curious, because if I was in a game, like, I'm going to bring a game to play with you,
yeah.
I would not choose Munchkin, because I feel like you wouldn't like it.
Well, so
spew those feelings.
All right, so yeah, so what I was remembering, I'm pretty sure what I was remembering was Flux, and I remember enjoying Flux.
Okay,
sitting down to play Munchkin, I was, it's a fun game, I guess. I feel like it's unnecessarily complicated. I feel like it's a really complicated game, and it doesn't have any need to be that complicated.
I can see that,
like. Like, so the game, you get your cards at the beginning, then you build your character, but it doesn't really matter if it's your character or not. You kind of don't have to build your character if you don't want to, and whether you do or you don't, it's probably not going to make much of a difference how the game goes.
Right.
And so then the game starts, and you kick in the door, and that means you draw a card, and maybe there's a monster. If there's not a monster, you get that card and you draw another card. Unless you want to fight a monster from your hand, then you can fight that monster, but then you can't draw another card. And then if you do fight the monster, maybe you fight him, maybe you run away from him. If you run away from him, oh well, but if you fight him and you win, then you get the card. And then if you don't fight him, or if you do fight him and you don't win, then you run away, but something bad might happen. And then it's the next guy's turn.
Well, not to mention that when you go to fight him, people can play cards to help you or hurt you when you're fighting him.
Right. And I just feel like it's so chaotic, and it's like I feel like we played two games of it in 2 days,
mm-hmm.
And I still feel like I was really lost at the end of the second game. So I think if I were to play the game, you know, 3 or 4 more times and really get the rules down,
mm-hmm.
and then sit down and play that with a group of other people who really know the rules really well, that I could have fun playing that game.
I would definitely say that Munchkin is a game that's better played when you've played it a few times.
Yeah.
Because it's a little complex, but it's funny hearing you describe it like that, and I realize that it only is complex. It's because I've played it a lot of times, and it's a game that I have issues with. But I've played it a lot of times, and I know it so well that it doesn't feel complicated to me. But I mean, that happens with lots of complicated games, you know.
But we kept doing the thing where we kick down the door, and then it's not a monster. So then what do? Do I get to loot the room? Yeah, you can loot the room. Okay, then I'll loot the room. And then when do we draw this card? When do we draw that card? When is it okay? When is it not okay? The basic rules of the game are so basic. It's a game built on exceptions, right?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and every card that you have in your hand is a different exception. So every exception is a different exception. And until you learn every single card, I feel like every time you play, until you have every card memorized, every time you play a card, you have to stop and everybody at the table has to read that card and scratch their heads and then argue about how that card's going to work.
But I would argue some of that is done by the designers on purpose. Because that's the type of game Munchkin is. I mean, like, there are consistently, like, there's Munchkin apparel you can buy, and most of those things have effects in the game. If you're wearing your Munchkin shirt in the game, you get a +1 to attack
right.
or something.
I remember that. And the rules say if you download the iPhone app, it'll give you a bonus in the game. But it's like, a $5 app to track your level and to get a bonus in the game. That kind of stuff.
Oh, it's not the game? I got excited for a minute. I was like, I would totally pay $5 for Munchkin on my phone, but
no, it's just a level tracking app. It's so that you can hit a button to track what level you are.
Dear Steve Jackson, that's lame.
Yeah. But it gets you a bonus for $5. I didn't buy it, so maybe there's
but
more
if you're
to
a hardcore
that,
Munchkin
but,
player?
Well, you probably would, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean I guess I kind of feel like the game I realized they did a lot of kind of stuff on purpose. They deliberately made every card kind of weird and different.
They wanted it to be funny.
They wanted it to be funny, and I feel like in a lot of cases they took it so far that it makes it difficult for new players to get into it. And like, I didn't have as much fun with it as I had with, say, Drunk Quest. Drunk Quest is the exact, and you're absolutely right. When I described Drunk Quest to you so many months ago, you said, "Wow, it sounds like Munchkin." You're right.
It's Munchkin.
It's the same basic setup as Munchkin, but it's a lot simpler. It's a much, much simpler approach, and I think it's more fun because of the simpler approach. And it had to be simple because it's a drinking game. And if you make it any more complicated than the real basic idea, nobody's ever going to finish the game because they're going to be too drunk and won't be able to keep track of what's happening.
Right.
But by making it simpler, I think it made it more fun and easier to get into and more approachable.
Yeah. I think you're right. My issue with Munchkin is I always feel like just when I get in the swing of things and start feeling like I'm having a really good time and my character's powerful
and
it's fun,
the game ends.
Somebody wins.
Yeah.
Like, I wish that you could play to like level 40.
The first time we played, I was like, oh man, level 10? No, we will never, never get to level 10. That is not going to happen.
Oh, it's only level 10, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I would say I would like a game we played to like level 20.
Yeah. Well, the first game ended up, it's like once somebody got to like level 7, getting to 10 was nothing.
Right.
But getting from like level 1 to level 5, that can be a real struggle, especially with everybody going back and forth.
Right. See, for me, being one of those like old RPGers who like really likes to like level up and be tough and stuff, that would always be a bummer to me. Because I'm like, oh, I've got this awesome character who's like half orc, half elf, and I'm like half male, half female, and I can do all these crazy things, and we're done.
Yeah.
And I didn't win.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's not really my kind of game. I don't usually do well with those sorts of kind of frantic, weird, just weird for the sake of weird kind of games. Not really my thing. But, I mean, whatever. I'll definitely play it again, and I feel like next time I'll have a better handle on what's going on, and maybe my feelings will change knowing the game better.
Did you play the original version?
Yeah, just the base set. Yeah.
Because there's like all sorts of
infinite. They have an Axe Cop expansion now. How cool is that?
that's pretty funny.
That's pretty cool.
Well, like they have the Guild now too, has their own set.
I saw in the paperwork that it was in the box,
And then you can buy like the one where you can mix them all together too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which just sounds, I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know either.
So
and the base set of the game, I mean, it could fit in a very small tuck box, but it's in this really big box because they want you to buy all the expansions and put them in the box.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was funny. So that's what I've been playing, Munchkin. It's about time that I got around to actually playing it. Like I said, I thought I had, but apparently I hadn't. So yeah, it's kicking the door, fight the monster, or loot the room. And if you fight the monster, and when you get treasure, but if you fight the monster and you don't win, then bad stuff happens. But if there's no monster to fight, you can fight a monster from your hand. But if you don't want to fight a monster from the hand, you can loot the room. If you fight a monster from your hand, though, you still can't loot the room, but you might get treasure, but you might not. And sometimes you need help, and sometimes they'll help you, but sometimes people won't help you, but only one person can help you because you got to divide up the treasure. And what's the deal?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You said it right there in lots and lots of words.
I just feel like it's a lot to keep track of in that game.
It's a lot happening. I just, by the way, verified $4.99 for a life tracker. Yeah. That's a ripoff. I don't care if you get a bonus in the game. It's a ripoff.
It's expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a free life tracking app on the App Store.
Yep. I saw that too.
Yeah. That's what we used. Yeah. So anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Moving on. So Munchkin was a good game to talk about, actually. I didn't know you were going to talk about that, but it fits well with our feature of the week.
Yeah, it does.
This is a real divisive issue.
It's difficult.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to talk about. It's something that you and I fall into two different camps on, I think, for the most part, which is probably evident to our listeners based on our pitches and our designs. And it's hard, but the topic is humor in games.
Mm-hmm. Serious business.
Very serious business. So, no, it is something, though, that you and I are very different on. And, I mean, obviously, your themes a lot of times are, I don't want to say, like, on the funny side, but, like, they're on...
I like silly themes, though.
Silly. There's a good word. Silly. Yeah. So, you know... But then again, I mean, I've done that a few times, too, and you've also designed stuff that's more serious, like Rocket Wreckers, for instance, you know? Not a lot of comedy in Rocket Wreckers.
It is kind of a silly concept, though.
It's a silly concept, but you did this artwork that makes it look like this real, like...
Yeah. It's got a not silly presentation for a kind of silly idea.
Right.
Anyway, go on.
So, kind of talking about the role of humor in games, and this isn't a super in, like, oh, we should really... This is so in-depth, we should talk about it. But, you know, it's something that is kind of different, you know, in the game community. I mean, because you look at some games like Redneck Life, right? The purpose of the game Redneck Life, which we've talked about this many times, is to be funny. They want you to laugh when you play that game. They want you to go, I have another kid named Daryl, and I'm losing my teeth.
They don't really care so much about in-depth game mechanics or strategy. They just want you to have fun and laugh while you're playing.
Right. And I'm not just talking about party games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, humor in general in games. Because I think that they're... I think you could have an in-depth game playing experience with humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's 1,000 games that our listeners are screaming right now, like, oh my gosh, that game does that. But you know, thinking about games that are both funny and very strategic, not a ton come to mind. Like, not a ton just leap into my mind like, oh yeah.
One of my favorite examples is Pompeii. Downfall of Pompeii. I mean, that can be a pretty intense strategy experience, but the game also comes with a 3D volcano that you're supposed to throw the dead people into.
And you're supposed to scream when you throw them in, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it helps. You know, and that's funny. I mean, that's funny. They could easily have just had a space on the board that you put them onto, but they give you a 3D volcano that you set up that you are supposed to drop the guys into. That means, hey, sense of humor. That's funny.
Right. What's so funny to me about that is when I hear the Downfall of Pompeii, like, I'm like, oh, it's a serious game.
Yeah.
It's very serious.
Right.
With 3D Volcano. Yeah. And it's an awesome game. That's the thing. But I think in an instance like that, it's where humor works very well because it makes it a little lighter. You know what I mean? Like it lightens the topic of the fact that everyone is getting torched by a volcano. Right,
dying in lava flows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So other serious strategy games that are funny. I mean, you could argue that... No, you can't. I was going to try and say it. You could argue that you could play Apples to Apples or Cards Against Humanity strategically.
You can't.
But...
Well, you could. You could try.
You could try, but
you're
nobody
playing
else at
the
table.
Wrong game, yeah.
Right, then you're playing it wrong.
Because that's why I hate Apples to Apples, because I try and play it strategically
and it doesn't work.
And it doesn't work at all.
What about a game like... See, there's also, you know, there's games that were meant to be funny and the games that kind of become funny, even though maybe they weren't supposed to be. Like, I remember when we were kids, one of my family's favorite game was Balderdash. You know, that's the game where the card has some kind of a funny word on it, or a weird word, and everybody at the table is supposed to make up a definition
and
pick which one they think is real.
Right.
And, you know, and of course we didn't play to win. We played to make up the funniest definitions we could.
Right. And that comes to knowing your audience because, yeah. I mean, I know that when we did the same thing, like, you would always try and, like, go that line of, can I make everybody laugh but still sound semi-realistic? Because people mm-hmm. will vote for that.
Yeah.
Because then you get the realistic people and you get the laughing people, right?
Yeah.
That's actually a really good example, I think.
It is, yeah, yeah, I think so. Catchphrase is another good one. Have you played Catchphrase?
Is that the Hot Potato version of Catchphrase, or...?
It doesn't matter what version, but, okay. you know, that's the game where the person who's it, who's holding the thing, has a word, and they're supposed to get the other players on their team to say what that word is, but they can't say, you know, so they're supposed to right. explain the definition. So, in my experience, the funnier you can be to get to that word, or the more ridiculous way you can get to explain that word, the more likely you are to win. But... maybe not necessarily, but I've had luck.
I don't think that makes any sense, what you just said. If they're laughing, they can't be guessing. You got to be serious business about that, yo.
Well, but it's the punchline. When they get the word, it's the punchline, then it's funny. I don't know. Anyway.
So, does taking a game that's serious
mm-hmm.
and retheming it with a ridiculously goofy theme make it, A, less of a serious game, mm-hmm. like as a gameplay game, and B, does it turn off serious gamers? Go.
That's a good question.
Questions too, actually, part yeah. A, part B.
I think if you take a serious game and give it a silly theme, you can make that game more appealing to a wider audience. And I think that can be very beneficial. You're right that it may make it more difficult for serious players to get into it.
So here's the thought. I haven't tried Bella the Ball, but a lot of people that we know tried and just gushed about how great it was.
Gaga over it.
And I wouldn't say it was a serious game, but I think it's a very strategic game.
Uh-huh.
And the theme is ridiculous. And the names of the people in the game are purposely like ridiculous and overly flowery and, you know, to really just make you laugh. But there's a good deal of strategy. Now, I'll say for me, that game sounds less interesting for me because of that.
Yeah.
Even though I like those style of games, the idea for me of playing a serious game that's super goofy just doesn't appeal to me as much.
Hmm.
But that's just me. All of our friends that tried the game, every single one of them only had amazing things to say about it.
Yeah.
So, not that I don't want, I actually do want to try the game. I just haven't been able to yet.
Right. So, can we... I'm not sure that I can address those questions other than just to... what I just said, you know, how about we come at it from this direction and say, ask the question, where does the humor come from? And does the humor come from the content of the game, or does the game just facilitate the humor coming from the players?
Well, look at a game like Munchkin, right?
Okay.
The game comes from the card text, right?
Yeah.
When I've got the staff of napalm.
Right. And the silly illustrations.
Right. I'm supposed to be like, staff of napalm.
Right.
Steve Jackson, that's hilarious.
Or the leather armor, but the leather armor is actually a cartoon of a woman in dominatrix gear.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's where the humor is coming from, the content of the game. And everybody's laughing with the game.
Right.
Okay, that's a fine line, because that's not always going to work.
Right. And a Munchkin has obviously been a wildly successful game because people expect that out of Munchkin, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they expect.
Right.
Goofy game mm-hmm. with some real gameplay, but really it's just about take that and being funny.
Yeah. It's about being chaotic and being crazy and, yeah, take that. Yeah. And I tried to get a little bit of humor into Rumblebum with the concept of it is silly because you're trolls baking stuff with bugs.
Right.
But on the recipe cards, I put some flavor text onto the recipe cards to say, you know, oh, you know, little, you know, tips on how to finish the recipe. Oh, you know, this one you garnish with boogers or something, you know,
right.
Just try and be gross and silly. But I think humor in a game is better when it's coming from the players.
Oh, well, that's like Balderdash, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Balderdash is not inherently funny.
Right.
If you played Balderdash with a bunch of super serious people who just wrote super serious definitions, the game would be really hard and not funny.
And kind of boring.
And also boring, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I think humor is better when it's coming from the players, not from the game. And the game is just making it possible for that humor to come out of them.
Right.
Now, that depends on you to be playing with fun and funny people, you know. But I think it leads to a better experience, to a more fun and funny experience. So how do you do that without drawing stupid pictures and writing jokes in your cards? How do you encourage your players to be funny?
Well, a game that makes me laugh anytime I've played it, but it does try and be funny with silly illustrations and stuff, but the players make it fun and funny, is Cash and Guns. Remember that game?
Yeah.
That's a game where we laugh a lot because you're pointing foam guns at each other.
Yeah. Okay. So what that game does well is, number one, it sets up kind of a familiar but silly scenario, and gives you a silly prop in a foam, right, a big orange foam gun to point, yep, at people, and then it puts all of the agency on the players. All of the action is performed by the players.
Right.
There's no randomness of cards. There's no moving a piece around a board. There's no reading text off a thing. It's, they just give you a silly scenario and a silly setup, and then all the humor and fun comes in the players. So I guess maybe that's an excellent example. So it's about the setup. It's about the world or the setting in which the player puts the players, or the game puts the players.
Another good example of that, Fiasco.
Yeah.
The storytelling game. Because Fiasco, right, gives you kind of a ridiculous setup, but it's not that ridiculous. Like, they just kind of give you an odd story. Like,
yeah.
Where are you at? We're at a base in Antarctica, and here are some props we have, like, in the story, which could be kind of weird, but not usually outwardly funny.
Right.
And then they say, tell a story. And the story almost is always funny. Anytime I've played it, it is.
It's true.
Not be just because, like, I'm like, I'm going to make this funny, because that's just kind of what people default to. Like, they know it's supposed to be silly, so they make it silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what we like, then, is we're saying that when humor works best, it's not the humor. A funny game is in its funniest is when it comes from the players, and the game just makes it possible for the players to be funny on their own.
Well, even Cards Against Humanity, right? I mean, they have they have funny things.
Right, but it requires the players to put those things together.
When you put those two things, like just reading the cards, they're kind of funny.
And kind of
but
gross.
But when you put them together, that's when they're hilarious.
Right. Yeah, right, absolutely. So it just facilitates people being gross or funny or vulgar or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I still really come back to, I'm trying to think of like one of the more serious games I can think of. Give me a really serious game.
A really serious game?
Super serious. Like, ooh. Dead serious.
Well, chess. Chess is a pretty serious game.
Okay. It's not what I was thinking, but that works. You know what though? Chess is a great example.
Because, he's laughing already.
No, because chess, I don't think chess will ever be funny, but to help facilitate differences and sometimes semi-funniness, think of all the different themed chess sets you can buy. Like the goofy characters as the different things, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee somewhere there's a Monty Python chess set that people would laugh when they saw.
That's probably
right?
That, yeah.
I mean, so that's just something to think about. But that said, I don't know that it would be openly funny unless, like, you had to quote Monty Python lines when you went to take something. You know?
Yeah. That'd be a tough one to make silly. Make fun. Make funny.
Chess, yeah.
Because it's still basically just the same game.
Maybe you have to tell a joke, and if the other people don't laugh, you don't get to take their piece.
You don't get to take the piece, yeah. What if you have to, when you take their piece, you have to get into a rap battle? That'd be funny.
No. Though, side note, that just reminded me, there's a game I need to pitch sometime about rap battles. Okay. I have a thing in my notebook that just says, rap battles. Use, like, word cards to put together, like, sweet rhymes.
Yeah.
Totally would be a fun game.
Sounds great. I wouldn't try and play that and probably lose, because I'm bad at rhyming.
Because then you'd have to put it down and then you'd have to, like, rap it back and forth, like, rap it to the person.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Yeah. That was just an idea I had at one point. I'll pitch a more in-depth version of said game at some point. I actually would have pitched that last week if I'd remembered
the notebook. All right, next week. Stay tuned.
Actually, maybe the next game I pitch if I don't have another idea.
Right on.
Spoiler alert. So, yeah. So we both agree that humor in games is funniest. And see, and here's something.
Mm-hmm.
The cards in Munchkin are less funny when you've played the game 30 times.
Yeah.
We agree, right?
Right.
Cards Against Humanity, less funny. Yeah. So, that said, even though that in Cards Against Humanity, it's semi-coming from the players, you know, the cards are such a big tool into doing that, that really does, I think, at least to me, prove our point that for consistent funny forever, it has to come from the players for that genuine funny.
You're right.
Otherwise, it just wears off. I mean, that's like Redneck Life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a fun game to play, but it's always just fun to play with new players.
Right.
Because it's funny to them, and you get to see them experience that.
Yeah.
Which makes it more fun for the other players.
True. Whereas Fiasco is going to be fun every time, because most of what you get is it comes from the players.
Yep. And it's unique.
And it's going to be unique every time. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so the more the game can lean on the players for that humor, the better. The funnier and the more fun that's going to be, and the more replayability that game is going to have.
Yep.
Yep, definitely.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we got somewhere on that one.
Yeah, that's good. It wasn't just a bunch of meandering.
No.
Look at us, listeners, having a point.
Ooh, having a good week. Yeah.
Of course, we're doing it talking about a non-serious topic.
Yeah.
If it was a serious topic, we'd have biffed it. Totally.
I don't know. Humor can be pretty serious. I mean, humor is a serious business, man. You know, I mean, it being funny is hard.
It's true.
It's difficult.
Maybe for you. For me, it's really easy.
Yeah, well, you're ugly, so you have to compensate in other ways. See, that's funny. I'm funny.
Yeah, that was a fake laugh, by the way.
I just made a joke. It's funny because it's true. I don't know what.
Your computer just glitched, and I thought that it was going to crash. And then I realized it crashed the last time we tried to record, we're recording into our other recorder. Right. So,
and I watched an icon appear and then disappear on the desktop. I don't know what it was.
And maybe it was the quit crashing icon, and you just have to wait for it. It's like Halley's Comet. It only comes back every once in a while. You have to be prepared.
Yeah.
Because if you don't see it, then your computer's just going to keep crashing.
Over and over and over again. But I saw it this time.
Sounds like the worst game ever.
I don't want to play that game.
Me either.
Let's go ahead and roll into the practicing the pitch, eh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're going to pitch a super funny game today.
No, I'm not. This is actually one of the more serious themes that I've come up with.
That's cool. I'm going to just keep trying to make it funny. I'm kidding.
That's fine. It would be funny if I told you the creative process of arriving at this game, but maybe I'll come back to that. The game is called Deified. D-E-I-F-I-E-D. And the reason that I really like that title is because it's a palindrome. And I love palindromes.
You do.
I really like palindromes.
I wish the word palindrome was a palindrome.
Yeah, that would be better.
Can you tell people what a palindrome is, just in case a listener doesn't know?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a palindrome is a word that is spelled the same backwards and forwards.
Noon.
Kayak.
Dad.
Civic. Oh, I win.
Mom.
Nah, weak. Alula.
What?
Alula.
What is Alula?
It's the bastard wing.
What?
I know. I went to a website to look up palindromes. That's kind of... Like, I was on one of those modes where I was like, gosh, I need a game idea. Let me just see if I can just look for something. And so I went to a website that just read a bunch of palindromes. And the Alula, it's a set of feathers at the first joint of a bird's wing that they use for stabilizing. And it's almost like a second wing on the wing because it's just a little small tuft of feathers. And it's usually not good for anything, but scientists call it affectionately the bastard wing.
Interesting.
And I was like, I read that first, and then I read the definition. I was like, oh, dude, I totally want to make a game called The Bastard Wing, because that would be a great name. And now I'm talking about it anyway. That was actually kind of where the idea for this game started, in an evolutionary process. But whatever, I'm not going to waste my time on that.
Why do you keep looking at me like I'm going to say something? It's your pitch.
I know, I'm just kind of rambling.
So, okay, so this game, what it does is it does stuff.
The game is called Deified,
All right.
Hey, that's a palindrome.
Hey, it is. Imagine that. I'm glad you noticed. Deified. Okay, so here's the setup. There's this this medieval city. Okay, and this city they have a spiritual leader, the god of the people. Okay, he is the god, the deity of this community, and he lives in the temple in the center of the city.
So like a god king.
He's a god king, okay. Essentially. Yeah.
Like a pharaoh type thing.
Sure. Exactly.
That's
yeah.
a good example of a god. Yeah,
perfect. Perfect. Yes. And he has just died. Maybe there's something shady about
Oops.
That, you know, but now the people are without their god king. Their god has died. And they need to find a new god to worship. Okay. And this is a two-player game. And so the players are each prophets, these prophets that have appeared in the community that are now going to try to bring the people of the city over to their way of thinking, to their teachings, to try and become the new god king, to be chosen by the people as the new god, that they want to become deified.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it is a strategy area control game. The board is kind of a long rectangle of it with a hex grid, okay? At either end, there is a hut where the prophet lives, okay? And that is the player. The player is the prophet. And the prophet never leaves the hut, okay? Because in order to be appropriately aloof and godlike, he cannot appear among the people.
But he does live in a hut.
Well, he lives in the hut because he is still just a man.
I'm just teasing.
You're
like, he's really kind of uppity living in his hut.
Yeah, well, he needs to, you know, well, he needs to come from a humble origin, but he also right. needs to be mysterious and
I get you.
And separate, you know.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. And so, okay, so this hex grid, in the center of the hex grid is the temple, the great temple. And then there are a few places around the board where there are shrines.
Mm-hmm.
But the most of the board is the city, okay? Mm-hmm. And you know, at either end, it's kind of outskirts and in slums. And as you get closer to the center, the city gets bigger and bigger. And then the big temple in the center. All right. That doesn't really have any big effect on gameplay. That's just what it looks like. The way that the prophet will get his messages, his teachings out to the people is with his disciples. So each player has three disciples, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the pieces that they move around the board to take actions.
Right. Right.
So the disciples, all three disciples, start in a space adjacent to the hut. Whenever the disciple is adjacent to the hut, the prophet can give that disciple up to three cards. Okay.
Okay.
And then they can send their disciples out into the city to preach to the people.
Okay.
Now, the best way I can think to explain this is just talk about the process of a turn of a game. Okay?
Sure, sure.
On your turn, you have three action points. You can use an action point to move a disciple, or you can use an action point to preach to the people. Okay. You can also use an action point to play a card, but we'll get to that. So you can spend all three action points to move one guy three spaces, or all three disciples one space, whatever. And then you get to that space, and then you spend your action point to preach to those people. And every time you preach to the people in that hex, then you put a marker down. This might be a cube, this might be a little disc or something, I don't know. Some kind of a marker down to say that I now have control, I have influenced the people, they're on my side, they're following my teachings now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But you can only do that on one hex at a time.
So you can't do, like, all three can't preach in three separate hexes.
Well, you can move all three on this turn, and then the next turn, all three of them can preach on the next turn.
Okay.
Yeah, because you've only got three action points. Now, the more influence you gain, because you then have a tracker on the side of the board that keeps track of the total number of hexes that you have, and as you gain hexes, you gain more action points, so the more influence you have, the more you can do on your turn.
Okay.
All right? And maybe it's every five, maybe it's every 10, I'm not sure. Kind of depends on the size of the board and balancing, that kind of thing. But alternatively, you can also play a card. Now, the card we're calling doctrines, all right? So when the disciples are at the prophet's hut, the prophet can give the disciples the newest doctrine or his teachings.
Right. Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Send them out to the people. And then the disciples, they can play a card to present the new teaching from the prophet to the people. And by doing that, it actually allows you to gain more influence and influence more hexes all at once.
So a doctrine might allow you to take control of two or three or four hexes all at once instead of just one.
That makes sense. Right?
Likewise, if you can get two disciples working together to play, you know, maybe there's a specific doctrine that if you play it alone, you can influence one hex. But if you have two disciples that work together to preach the same doctrine together, instead of each influencing one extra hex, they can influence six hexes or something. You know, the ways to multiply their influence, you know, by working together for these teachings, they can reach more people, okay, coordinating their efforts. The downside is, though, the only way that the disciple can get more cards is to go back to the hut.
Right, so the cards are tough to get.
Right, and the further out in the city you go, the farther back you have to travel to get back to the hut.
Right.
You know, so that's tricky, all right? So maybe you're saving some of those cards. Maybe you're going to go as far into the city as you... It's, anyway, it changes the strategy, right?
Yes.
Of how you're going to go out there. If you get to a shrine, if you can preach to a shrine might be more difficult to influence, but they're going to give you more followers as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the game ends when somebody takes control of the temple. Now, that doesn't mean that they take control of the city. That just means that's the end of the game, and then the final decision is made based on who has control of more people.
So, like, you might have to preach one of your doctrines in the temple... Mm-hmm. But you can't do that until you have X number of influence. So once you get to that X number of influence, it's about getting a disciple there with a card.
Right.
And ooh.
And even then, if the other player has more influence over the city as a whole than you have after taking the temple, they might still beat you out. They might win. Because the people might say rise up and say, no, I don't care that you got to the temple. We still like him better.
Might be fun. It's just a thought. First of all, I really like this idea. You shared this idea a little bit with me ahead of time, and I liked it when you told me, and I still like it. I actually like it better hearing you actually physically like describe it, because I just read some stuff about it. But I just had a thought. It might be a fascinating end game if the goal was to get your prophet to the temple, but your prophet could only go through hexes that you control. Because your prophet is like, right, I mean, the other guy would be gunning for him, right? So... You have to only go through places you control. So basically, you get enough influence, you've made that pathway, and then he can move to the temple. And then, so what's cool about that is, right, if he gets to the temple and he does the thing, and if he wins, he wins. But if he gets there and it turns out the other guy actually has more influence than him, rut-row, they're going to get rid of him, which means the competition has just been gotten rid of, so the other guy's going to win.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
So the idea is somebody's going to eventually have to risk it.
Right.
And you could get a bonus for getting your prophet there to have them preach first, but you also risk... It's like exposing your king in chess, right?
Yeah.
You know, you expose your king too early and... Or, no, you never want to expose your king. It's like your queen. You expose your queen too early and I'm told that's a bad strategy.
I guess it can be. I'm not a chess master. I'm not sure. No, that's an interesting thought to actually have the prophet out there as a piece that you would move. And then you would almost have to use your disciples to protect your prophet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the other people could be trying to preach to cut chasms,
cut you off,
to keep
right.
you. So I know how much influence you have at any given time.
Yeah, you can see each other's track and score.
What if you couldn't?
What
if it was Small World style?
Mm-hmm.
And when I preach to a section, you see that I get 5 points here, and I take a 5-point tile, which on one side, they all look the same, and on the other side, it says 5 points. I take it, I put it face down in my... Oh. So you can see how many hexes I have, how many things I have. But because hexes are getting converted back and forth...
Yeah, it's tough to keep track
of
that.
And I never lose my influence, say, right?
See, my thought was that you would if somebody... If I have control of a hex and you come and take that hex from me, then I would lose it and you would gain it.
Okay. That works, but still, then I'm still giving you a coin, you know, one of my markers, but you don't know how much I actually have.
That's a good point.
And if there's no way to discernibly count that, you just have to try and count cards, basically,
right?
To think how many.
And you could at any time stop and count all the hexes on the board, but that takes time.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially because it sounds like you plan on having a lot of hexes.
Yeah, well, that would have to be, I mean, that would have to, you have to keep track of that, yeah.
So.
And it would require... See, that's one of the things that worries me about the game is that you'd have to have little markers for every... as many hexes as there are on the board, which could be kind of a pain.
That's true. Unless there was a better way to...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You don't really... Yeah, I guess you do.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, and maybe the board wouldn't need to be huge. You know, the bigger the board, the longer the game takes. You know, so maybe it wouldn't have to be a super huge board.
Right.
So yeah, it's not like there's going to need to be 200 little markers.
Right.
You could probably get away with 50 of each kind, you know?
Plus, you could also have it to where you could run out of markers because that you've exhausted your ability to spread influence.
That's true.
So...
Mm-hmm. Or you could just lift them from one spot to another and just abandon some areas.
That's what I mean, yeah. So, like, in the beginning, maybe you're preaching to the poor because they're easy targets, right? So that's the outskirts of the town.
Oh, yeah,
and that's then as you move in, you're kind of pulling your influence away. But if you did have to bring your profit up, that would really make you have to think about that.
Yeah.
Because he's got to get through those areas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, that's not a bad idea. Huh. So, kind of like that.
Because then that limits the amount of tokens you need.
Right.
But it makes it, I think it really enhances the strategy because now you're like, all right, I can only control this many.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's not bad. Yeah. So anyway, and I think there would be other cards in the game. It wouldn't just simply be the doctrines. There would also be, cards that the prophet might be able to play on his turn. You can take an action instead of your disciple spending, your prophet could spend one, and that would be, you know, to mess with your player, with the other player, to cancel out somebody collecting something, to give your disciple another card while he's still in the field. Ways to kind of break the rules a little bit, you know, and mess with things.
And if you were going to go with the idea of secret points, some of the cards could just be like, when you take an area this turn, you get 3 extra points. So that means that I couldn't just count cards. I couldn't just count hexes to determine how many you had because that, you know, chances are I may have more.
I really kind of like that idea a lot, actually. Yeah, that's a good idea. Cause then when it's a shrine, cause the shrine are worth 2 influence instead of just 1, but then it's easier. You can just take a 2 tile instead of, or 2 token instead of 1 token or something.
Right.
That's a much better idea. I like that a lot.
And then that makes it a risk when you go to the, you know, you could also try and fake your opponent out. Like you could be getting for it and they're trying to like, oh crap, I gotta get my profit there, you know, and you know you're losing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So, they're going to try and run there.
Right.
You can. So.
Yeah. So anyway, deified. That's the basic idea. I think it's a fun concept. I definitely want to try and do something with it. I've decided now that I've got Rumpelbaum done and I worked through Maelstrom, those are my 2 big projects since Gen Con. So I think my next thing is to get back to Rocket Wreckers and get that back into better shape and really get something done with that in preparation for hopefully for that stupid series to air at some point in the future. But I need a project for next time for after Rocket Wreckers. I have to do some more work on that. And I really I'm kind of excited about this idea. It's very different than anything I've done before.
It is, which is probably why I like it so much.
Yeah, thanks, jerk. So that's what I'm going to do. Deified. I think it could be interesting and neat.
Cool.
So there you go. That's my pitch.
I like it. I am into this pitch.
Good.
We have a few comments, if we can go to those right now.
Absolutely.
So these couple comments were from a few episodes ago, back on episode 76, The Circus and the Battle Box. First one is, I know we already talked about this, but last time I said a couple people told us that game was called Shogun, the game with the dice tower.
Yeah.
Just to name some of those other people. Kevin Jeffrey was one of them. And we thank you for letting us know about that. Another comment we had was from Jacob Smith, who said, "Well, guys, I feel kind of bad. I'm a huge fan, and I've listened to the show. I've listened to almost every episode, but this is my first comment." He's like, "I just want to note, OMG chess boxing. Thank you for bringing this into my life. Secondly, I'm really excited about the Rumble Academy. I think it sounds awesome, and as soon as it fits on my budget, I want to pick up a copy.
Thank you.
Yeah, and please keep pumping out the episodes. That we will do.
We are.
We are episode pumping machines. Mm-hmm.
Even when we're sick.
Well, I don't get sick. It's
even
just...
when I'm sick. You never get sick. You're just like perpetually sniffly.
Yeah, I have allergies. Yeah. I think that's what it is. Like, the allergies somehow make my immune system just ignore everything
else. Always running at 11.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's probably it, right?
Man.
That's a science thing, right? Yeah.
Sure. We got a Twitter question here from, or a comment from Frank Zazanis. I guess he's going back to the live show that we recorded at Gen Con. And he says, my idea using pom-poms for a game. He sent us a picture on Twitter of his concept for using pom-poms for a game. Yeah, you remember that we had a challenge at our Gen Con live show where we were trying to make a game using a mechanic or using a component.
Right, yeah.
And it was a difficult challenge, and the component suggestion was pom-poms. And so he sent us a Twitter pic of, a cup game. I don't know. Anyway, maybe we can get this on the website so people can look at that in the show notes.
Yes.
It might be fun.
Yeah. Because I did look at that drawing, too, and it's hard to explain.
It's very difficult.
I think if people saw it, they would understand. He also said he'd give us some better pictures when he had a proto done.
Yeah. Okay. I also got an email from a gentleman, David Officer. He was just giving me some feedback and comments on the storefront that I put together for Rumplebum on the GameCraft website. And he just said that he really likes the way it looks. Top-notch card art. Aw, thank you. He acknowledged that getting the GameCrafter print quality to match what you're imagining was difficult, and so he complimented me on making that look better. He liked the rules, and I want to give thanks to Neil and Scott, good friends of the show, who gave me a lot of good comments on finishing the rules for that. And his recommendation, he said that I should really try and get a video up on the storefront page on GameCrafters, people playing the game. That's a really good idea. I just haven't had time to do that. So thank you very much, David. And his game on there is Dungeon Doors on the GameCrafter. So look for that.
Cool. I think that's all the ones we have this time around.
All right. Fantastic. So that is all we've got, I think.
It is.
If you guys are interested in the Cardboard Arcade Contest, time's up.
Yep.
Sorry. The deadline was this past weekend. So Jason and Chevy and I are reviewing those right now. We got a lot of good submissions. And on an upcoming show, we will announce the winner.
Yep.
So look forward to that in the next week or two, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be in one of the next two episodes. If not, you'll have to wait. For a whole little
while. An episode after.
Just depends on Chevy's schedule and we can get him on next time we record.
Right. So thanks to everybody who entered for that. And that's good. And what am I forgetting?
I don't know.
No other shout outs or.
Shout outs, yeah.
No other shout outs?
What?
Okay. Well, then that's going to do it for us. Thanks everybody for listening to the show. We appreciate it, as Jason woos. You can get in touch with us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin and I am @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can check out the BTG co-op, btgco-op.com. That's where we're trying to collect a lot of good resources for other game designers out there. If you are a web designer and know anything about database programming, we could use your help with some projects for the co-op.
We could, really.
Really. I mean, we would appreciate that.
We're a little stifled with some of the things that we need to do.
We have big ideas and not a lot of ability to get them done. So, we can't pay you, but we would love to give you lots of recommendations and...
We do have some friends that have been willing to give us some ideas and some feedback, but we are looking specifically for someone who has the time to help us a little. I don't think it'd honestly take anybody too long if you knew what you were doing.
No, I'm not looking for anything too complicated.
And I don't know what I'm doing as much, so I'm just mostly guessing.
Yeah, so if you're interested, let us know. buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com.
Just ask yourself, are you down with COOP?
Right. And don't forget about Something from Nothing.
You know me.
I know you. Don't forget about Something from Nothing, our bi-weekly video podcast where me and Jason and Chevy and TC Petty get together with some other game designer buddies. And we just talk about design, talk about what we're working on and what we are playing. And we rap about mechanics and the process.
Wicca.
Right.
I'm pretty much just seeing how much I can distract you.
You're on tonight, dude. Yeah, doing well. So that's all she wrote. That's all we got. And that's going to wrap us up.
Peace.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
There are no funny outtakes from this show to put on the end here. So, I don't have anything funny. Sorry, guys. Maybe next week.